Word of mouth.
Word of mouth.
Word of mouth.
Word of mouth.
This is Word of Mouth from New Hampshire Public Radio. I'm Taylor Quimby, in for Virginia Prescott. An Afghan girl with startling green eyes, the ghostly wreckage of the Titanic, Jane Goodall observing a family of chimpanzees. There's just something about the images on the cover of National Geographic magazine that sears into the collective memory. Chris Johns has a unique perspective on National Geographic's iconic covers. Throughout a decade-long stint as editor-in-chief and currently as the magazine's chief content officer, he's played a key role in selecting the images that make it to the front page. But he's also been on the other side of the table as well, having first come to National Geographic as a photographer. He joins me now to demystify the process of selecting a cover image and to talk about a stunning new book from National Geographic, The Covers, Iconic Photographs, Unforgettable Stories. And Chris Johns, welcome to Word of Mouth.
Wonderful to be with you, Taylor.
So as a photographer, your images landed on the cover of National Geographic 8 times. Any that you're particularly proud of?
I would say that the image I'm probably the most proud of was a cover I did, actually one of my first stories, and it was one of my first international stories. And of all things, it was a story on soybeans. And of course, what's wonderful about a journey for National Geographic magazine are these discoveries you make. And in one particular case, we made a discovery that geishas in training to learn how to use their chopsticks beautifully, they practice with a very silky tofu in Japan. And it became actually a pretty sensuous cover, which was one of my first covers.
Can you describe it for me? And maybe tell me what about it that makes it a cover shot?
It's a very striking image visually. It's extremely tight upon the geisha's face with white makeup and this beautiful red lipstick. So it's a picture that's easy to recognize. It's got a degree of provocativeness. It has beauty in it, and it has surprise in it that you wouldn't necessarily associate this rather drab-looking plant that produces soybeans with,
right,
a food and a culture that beautiful.
What does the cover selection process look like? I mean, how long does it take? Who's involved? How many people?
Well, I would submit that the cover process starts about 2 years before a year to 2 years before the cover's published.
Wow.
Because we start to identify stories that we believe will make powerful covers. And then, it finally comes down to the editor-in-chief of the magazine, Susan Goldberg, the creative director, Bill Maher, our publisher, and we sit and have a discussion about what cover we think is the most successful. In many cases, we'll say we don't quite have it yet. We'll go back to the drawing board. But ultimately, at the end of the day, while we do it as a group, the decision ultimately rests with the editor-in-chief, Susan Goldberg.
Well, it's amazing to think that you do this 2 years sometimes in advance of the cover. Is the content also being created with that much forethought?
Absolutely. But that's also to say that there may be a story that we do a very quick turnaround on as well.
Do you find that certain subjects tend to work better for the cover than others?
Oh, we certainly do. Yes, archaeology, ancient civilizations do. For example, a Mayan cover we had in 2007 was an incredibly popular cover. A recent story we did on Stonehenge was an incredibly popular cover. But the other thing we've learned, too, is people love science, and they especially love a science they connect with. An example of that would be in March 2008, we had a magnificent border collie that looks just like my border collie, Mickey, and it's called Inside Animal Minds.
A couple other rules that I read in the book. Ancient civilization, space does very well.
Yes.
Animals don't do as well as you might think. Pets do, so that speaks to
the
cover that you're talking about. And another one, portraits aren't very good. Why is that?
Well, I don't think people – we're called National Geographic, and people are interested in us because of our emphasis on geography and places. Now, earlier we were talking about rules. I'll tell you two rules on the portrait end and the animal end beyond pets that have been broken. And one, of course, is that famous iconic cover of the Afghan girl.
Of course, with the incredible eyes.
Right. In June of 1985, we found her 17 years later and put her on the cover as a mature woman, a mother, in April of 2002. On the Natural History or Wildlife Realm, a very popular cover we did in 2008 was a penetrating photograph, a portrait of a mountain gorilla looking you right in the eyes, and the headline for that one is, Who Murdered the Mountain Gorillas? This was after a catastrophic event that occurred in Virunga National Park in Africa, mm-hmm. Where some crime syndicates had come in and, literally murdered gorillas. And, that cover sold very well for us because there's an emotional connection with that gorilla that you don't really quite find in too many other animals. Like I say, there are exceptions to every rule. If the photograph and the cover line support each other, a portrait or a wild animal can work on the cover.
National Geographic first appeared on newsstands in 1998. Before that, you had to have a subscription. Now, did that change the cover selection process moving forward?
You know what I think it did for us, Taylor, was it made us really value clarity, to be very direct and clear as to what that cover story is and why you need to pick it up and read it.
Another significant date in National Geographic history, quite a bit earlier, though, 1959, when the very first color photograph appeared on the cover. So I'm guessing that must have inspired a big reaction.
It did, and that photograph, believe it or not, was a fighter jet. That cover was fine.
Fine isn't exactly a glowing review.
Well, times change. The fact is that cover now would never work for us. It's simply not good enough. I'm just being very honest with you.
How so?
What you would want now is a cover that's probably a little more energetic, that's a little more provocative. And, in 1955, that cover was fine. That was good. But, we didn't have the crowded space we do now in the media environment. Times are different.
Well, the world of photography has changed a lot since the 50s, of course, and photographers and editors now have Photoshop at their disposal. Has that posed any challenges in probably what I would think the past 10 years or so?
What it's done for us is really given us an opportunity to talk about the virtues of authenticity, that the photographs on our magazine are not altered. They're real. They're with real people, real events taken by people who deeply care about the subject they're photographing and have gone to great lengths to make pictures, in many cases, that have never been made before. And the technology, of course, is fantastic. I'll give you an example. In October 2009, we had a cover story on the redwoods, the world's tallest trees. Mm-hmm. Michael Nichols had worked in the Humboldt County area in Northern California for almost a year to photograph the world's tallest trees. And as a young boy who was raised in southwestern Oregon, very close to the redwoods, I recall going into Redwood National Park and Jedediah Smith National Park and looking at these trees and wondering what on earth the top looked like. I can't even see the whole tree. I could just see the very bottom in this lush, beautiful forest. And Nick, of course, had that same feeling when he was working in Humboldt County. So he worked very closely with our technical people to figure out a way to photograph that tree using cameras, three cameras, on a platform, suspended on a line between the tree they're photographing and another redwood tree, to photograph it from top to bottom, and then to stitch nearly 100 pictures together to give you a complete, accurate composite of a redwood tree from top to bottom. So those are the kinds of things that have been a joy for us to embrace. And, of course, that does mean digital photography is key to doing that. Computers are key to doing that, but it's a real photograph. It's not something that we doctored to try to make it more entertaining or whatever the case may be.
Well, I suppose we can't say goodbye until you answer one last question, and that, of course, has to be, what is your all-time favorite cover from the magazine's history?
Oh, gosh,
I thought this might stump you.
You know what I would say to that, Taylor, is that almost varies from day to day, if not week to week. Today, what I'd say is that July 2008 photograph and cover lines of who murdered the mountain gorillas is my favorite.
Well, Chris John, if you change your mind tomorrow, just email us and we'll let everybody know. And thank you so much for speaking with me today.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you.
Chris Johns is Chief Content Officer of National Geographic, which is out with a beautiful new book, The Covers, Iconic Photographs, Unforgettable Stories. If you'd like to see some of the stunning images we talked about today, we've got a slideshow on our website, wordofmouthradio.org. Earlier this week, we talked to Silvio Pietrolongo. He's vice president of charts and data development at Billboard, about some changes that are being made to the Billboard 200. That's their week-by-week list of the country's top-selling albums.
You know, we're keeping the pure sales part intact, but we're also adding streaming activity of tracks from albums and also downloaded tracks as well.
Well, those changes went into effect on Wednesday, and while there weren't any huge shifts in the rankings, we were surprised to see that 1989 returned to number one, proving that album sales still trump streaming when it comes to Taylor Swift. The big winner in Billboard's new chart metric, as Silvio Pietrolongo predicted, is Ariana Grande. Her album My Everything jumped from 39th place on the Billboard 200 to number 7. Also creeping up the list from 13th place to 9th is the soundtrack to Frozen, which made the top 10 for the first time since September, proving that parents everywhere should expect to hear Let It Go at least another couple thousand times before their kids find a new obsession.
Let it go, let it go, can't hold it back anymore.
Well, that about does it for today's show. Thanks for spending some time with us. Earlier in the program, we chatted with Bill Littlefield of NPR's Only a Game about the art of sports writing, and he provided us a list of his favorite sports books. You can check it out at wordofmouthradio.org. You might be able to find a really good Christmas present if you've got a big sports fan in the family. I'm Taylor Quimby, in for Virginia Prescott. Join us for more Word of Mouth right here on New Hampshire Public Radio.
It's funny how so.
Yeah, I really have heard this song a lot. Can we find something else to play?
You're as cold as ice.
Yeah, okay, that works.
You're willing to sacrifice our love.
Word of Mouth is produced by
Taylor Quimby,
Logan Shannon,
and senior producer Maureen McMurray.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals
and not those of NHPR,
its Board of Trustees,
or its underwriters. Word of Mouth is a production of New Hampshire Public Radio.